हरि ओम सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 1, Realizations of Vyasadeva in Trance, page 36, Anucheda 43. Thus, scriptures speaking of non-difference of Brahman and Jiva should be coordinated with the conclusion that Vyasa experienced in Samadhi. Because right, there must be authority, so you can't just take something however you find it. Both the Jiva and the Lord are conscious entities. By the Achintya Shakti of the Lord, natural to him, which makes the impossible possible, there can be both difference and non-difference of Jiva and Brahman. Thus, contradiction is avoided. This is understood by comparing the Jiva to a particle in the ray of the sun which represents the Lord. Right? So then by doing that, you see, is non-different, but different. Right? So, see, the difficulty comes up from all these different aspects is that there's the problem that they've got things reversed. They're trying to take it and make that Brahman is the highest feature. And then Paramatma and Bhagavan are lower features. So that causes the whole problem, because if Brahman has no qualities, then how do you get Paramatma and Bhagavan and the Jivas? So therefore they have to come up with all kinds of weird philosophies. Right? So if people are, you know, easily appreciative of this, then you can simply say it's like taking the pot, and then some ether is, you know, some sky is in the pot. So therefore, just like that, it's separate, but you break the pot, it goes together. Right? And if that works for you, then it works good. If that doesn't work, that doesn't make sense. Then you have bifurcation doesn't make sense. Then you have the reflection. Okay, so then it's like you take the pot, put some water in the pot, then you put it out, then the sun is reflected in there. And so then, you know, and then if they go for that, because you see it's a little more subtle. They're using a little more things, it becomes more complicated, so therefore it's more bewildering. You know? Does that make sense? So then if that's defeated, then they have to get more complicated. So you're going to have to go more into proper... They're being defeated by who? Right? Not by the Shaktas and the Shaivas and all that. They're being defeated by the Vaishnavas. So then they're going to have to look at the Vaishnava philosophy and then try to see something in there. Then they're going to try to take that, okay, you have this Mahavishnu, right? He's known as Jiva, so then he somehow or another, you know, suddenly becomes... covered by avidya or upadis, where the upadis come from. That, you know, that becomes the problem, because if you're putting Brahman at the top, you can't explain anything else. So they're simply trying to get you to be absorbed in it. So then they'll take Mahavishnu, and then he's dreaming, and then because of his dream, then you have this whole illusion and all that. So that's actually what's going on. And then when Brahman accepts this, then Brahman becomes Ishwar, because Ishwar comes and you see they perform the pastimes in here to bring the Jivas, you know, back to the spiritual platform and all that. And so then they're trying to take it that this is then what's going on. So they're just taking a little bit of the Vaishnava philosophy of the primary creation and then trying to assimilate that and make it look like now it's their philosophy and now it all works. Because the first one, it didn't work, right, at all. And the fun part is it's more straightforward, so therefore there's a better chance that those who accepted that are the ones that Ramanujacharya was able to defeat, right? And then we see is then, you know, to get interested in the proper philosophy. Then those who didn't, then you have the reflection, so now they're taking that, then the sun and the reflection, so you're getting a little bit closer to our philosophy. But this, you know, so they're more convinced. So then Madhvacharya will come along, he'll defeat them. Right? Now, you know, they've been defeated twice by the Vaishnavs, and though the ones that are really holding out, they're really hardcore, like that, then they come up with this new one, which basically takes some of the Vaishnav philosophy and integrates it with them. Right? But it still does not explain at all why Brahman would do any of this. Because Brahman does not have to do any of this. Right? Because no features, no personality, just consciousness. And so why would there be, and there's no action, there's no results, you can't get results from nothing. You can't do action with nothing. Right? So why, if they're taking that as the thought, why do they need to have all this other stuff? That's because they're taking themselves as an important element in this. Because in any of these philosophies, they don't exist. Right? Especially in the Ekavad, you know, Ekajivavad, we're just part of someone's imagination. So what's the point, whether we're becoming, self-realized or not? It doesn't matter. We're just part of the dream. So then you have to establish that the one jiva, it wants that to happen. But then why should we follow that one jiva's, you know, authority? Right? Because anyway, and when is that one jiva going to come to the platform of going back to in knowledge and then going back to Brahman? Right? So the whole point is it just doesn't make sense. They're just attached to the idea that Brahman is the highest and that they can become Brahman. Right? So they can just merge, everything just disappears. So as Prabhupada, and the Acharyas point out, it's spiritual suicide. So it's just that kind of a thing, that tamas there of that really wanting to be able to control and all that is very prominent in them. And so they're not able to give that up. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just an attachment, just like everybody else. But in so doing, they use the field of philosophy to try to establish their point. Right? Well, in the realm of people want to enjoy, then they try to say how what they're doing is fine. You know, something goes wrong, and then they say, oh, but everybody does this. So like that they're trying to do. It's the same as they're just more materialist. Yes?
It's interesting. Just recently I spoke with the rabbi, and he told, we had like a religious conversation, and he's teaching Torah. He's got students. So okay. He asked me what I said, yeah, I teach Shastra. So then he even showed me on the computer, and his theory right now is that everything is like a hologram. It's God's dream.
Okay.
And he even showed me on his computer when the real man dancing together with the image which is projected on the, on the stage.
Right.
And it's a complete harmony, and he says that we don't exist actually, it's God's dream. So they came to the same conclusion.
Yeah, they've come
after,
to
after, like so many years of contemplation.
Yeah. So they end up with the Ekajiva vad, right?
Ekajiva, which is, it doesn't really matter because we don't exist.
Yeah. Anymore. But they have at least the thing that God is there.
Yeah.
But so they're impersonalist, but at the same time there's this element of personalism. So it's the Paramatma level. It's not very well informed. That's why the Bhaktivinoda Thakura will make the point that actually, except for Vaishnavs who have, that have that faith, come to the point of Shraddha, who, accepted the shelter of the spiritual master, no one else is actually on the Bhagavan platform of understanding. But it's not that you can't talk about it, because Paramatma means it's a combination between the aspect of Bhagavan and the aspect of Brahman. Right? So you have that impersonal aspect, but at the same time there's the personal, but it's not so personal that it becomes Bhagavan, but it's not so impersonal that it's Brahman. You know, so it's kind of in between. So you see, all these processes all have that. That's the maximum they'll get. They preach the impersonal kind of thing. You'll see in their process, there's always going to be some aspect where God's there, some supreme deity, some entity that they're going to worship. Even the Buddhists, they can't function with just nothingness. So they even have their deities and all these kind of things. They're you know, great sages and all these kind of aspects. But yeah, so that's the point, is that, so we'll emphasize, you know, the aspect of God, the person, the personality, you know, our relationship with Him. But you take it as far as people can appreciate. But we avoid this other side like this, that it's the, you know, all the impersonal sides. Because otherwise, then they're going to get distracted. Yes.
Maharaj, in the Achintya Bheda Veda philosophy, the Achintya part is it that Krishna has inconceivable shaktis through which he is arranging the whole thing?
Yes.
Is that the inconceivable part? Because many people accept, okay, to understand that there is a supreme, many people can infer it. But to understand that how is arranging everything, how can there be so much variety, that's where it's out of the...
That's where it goes beyond. See, the maximum you can understand with the material consciousness that Krishna allows is that there is an unlimited supreme that is changeless. Right? That's the maximum, these two features. That's what you see, is that it'll be common to all of them. That there's the unlimited, eternal, like that, and unchanging, like that. Because otherwise, with no change, how do you have that faith that there's some steadiness and everything like that? So that's the maximum that Krishna will allow just with material intelligence. So that you'll see all of them will come up to that. Then they may come up to that there, but now to make it viable that people will take it up and practice it, then you have to have two features of the aspect that there is a supreme. So we've already discussed that, so that part is there. But it also has to be that there's good work. There's pious activities where you do good work and people will benefit. Right? Because you have gain and safety. So that you have a stable supreme, that'll create the safety. But gain means then we have to be able to do good work and get profit. Right? So you see is that any religious process that has this, it will move forward. Right? So even you see is that these kind of modern movements, there's always the aspect of everyone working together, and that, and what's the point? Because everyone would gain. And so the enemies of this will be the ones that aren't seeing, aren't cooperating together the way they say to cooperate together. Right? And so then they'll be against those persons. Even though the philosophy is, no, they're supposed to accommodate all living entities. But they don't. Only Vaishnavas can actually accommodate all living entities because they all come from Krishna. Right? So you just have these inherent flaws that are there, because that's just how it is. That's avidya. And the vidya that's there, we see, is that it's technically, it's within avidya. It's still within the concept, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So you always have to address those. I'm the controller and enjoyer. So I'm the controller, safety, and I'm the enjoyer, gain. Right? So there's always the thing is, I get something, then you keep it safe. So someone's intelligent, let's say someone gets a lot of money, okay? Just suddenly gets a lot of money. Just like that. So then,
can we explain this suddenly?
Sorry?
Can we explain that suddenly water and details? A lot of money?
Oh, the money part. Okay. I got into another aspect of suddenness. Yeah, so then Whatever, they get an inheritance, they win the lottery, you know, something like that. It's one of those kind of suddenlies, you know, that in other words, it's a suddenly that we can't do anything about. You know. So, now, if they just take that money and just, you know, take it for granted and just have parties and spend it and this and that, no one will think they're intelligent. Because they've gained, but where's the safety? Now, if they get that money, they invest it, you know, in such a way that the money will maintain and ideally grow. And then, from that, then they'll improve the quality of their own life, whatever it is. They're living very simply. They may get, you know, a better facility, this, that, but they won't waste money. People will say that's intelligent, because then gain and safety are together. Does that make sense? Like if someone says, okay, they have enough money, I can live the rest of my life comfortably, then you'll say that's intelligent. Right? Because they have both the gain and safety. So we're always going to look at both. So that's the difficulty, is that we talk about the gain and safety, but it actually has to be there. So let's say, yeah, does that make sense? So even within the practical fields, you'll see, let's say within the political field, the social political field, that the ones that talk about this, you know, everyone working together and that, are against those who actually do work together and actually make money. Because they just work within their group, because they only work with people that can make money. And so they support that community. And they're a tight community. And so they are following that point of the community working together, doing everything together like that. They just don't consider anyone outside the community. Right? If you're not someone who can work on their social economic platform, then they don't consider them. They're who you take advantage of. Right? But we see with the opposite social party, then they're going to look at it that, no, we should all cooperate, you know, like these people, they're just exploiting. So we'll just all work together and we'll, you know, be prosperous and that. But they'll make their position strong by opposing the other party. So each one exploits the other for their gain. But the one actually makes money and the other one doesn't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then that point of not making money is... they talk about it. They talk about the facilities, but where is it? You know what I'm saying? Because all the benefits that are there are coming from whoever is paying taxes. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that it's just the same thing. It's just the opposite. So it doesn't matter. That's why Maya's there. She bewilders. Because we may ask, how do they come up with these stupid philosophies? Because of avidya. Because of Krishna's philosophy. So... therefore, that's why it's said only by surrender to the Lord. And that surrender means surrendering, as we sing from Chaitanya Charitamrita, surrendering to the Vaishnavas and following the instruction. Then we can actually, Krishna will reveal the actual position. So we can see it's whatever they're talking about, it's already there within our philosophy. Because they can't come up with something outside of that. Right? You know, even we come up with the Pastafarians. It's still pasta. You know, they've seen pasta. They've eaten pasta. So it's not that they came up with something that wasn't there. Does that make sense? So they're still working within the realm of their experience. So you can't work beyond that. And so only by Krishna's grace, then it can be revealed. But Krishna does it so nicely, because being personal, it can be done through the areas of your experience. Because Krishna being everything, and what makes everything function, you can find Krishna there. And so by working with Krishna in that consciousness, that's Yukta Vairagya, then in any position you're in, you can actually come to realization. So, if that's appreciated and we're fixed in that, then all these other philosophies, you just see where they're taking from and then how they're misapplying it. So they're coming up with Mahavishnu as Sankarsana, who's known as Jiva. Fine, but then they're turning him into not Vishnu Tattva, just an illusion himself, who creates another illusion, that what Brahman takes on that illusion, and then it's just all illusion. And so if it's all illusion, why are we worried about it? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So, that's the point, is that we're, you know, why are we worried about it? It's because we're individuals. So, and they're pointing out that Brahman's taking part in this. Why would he, why would Brahman do this unless there's a personality? Yeah. And did you explain to him about?
No, I think he's like elderly guy, and he wouldn't listen to me. He was just really pushing his arguments. Like, I'm a kid, and so I was like, yeah, yeah.
Okay, but it's interesting, huh? So, Eka Jivavad, okay.
Took them 5,000 years to come
to get to that, yeah,
slow.
Yeah. Slow, yeah, I mean, what, who's it was in Kumari Labhata?
No. Madhusudan Vachaspati something.
Madhusudan
Vachaspati. Vachaspati is our. Madhusudan
Saraswati came in the 14th century. So now this is 21st, so that means 700 years ago they got it together. So.
A bit faster.
Yeah, a bit faster. Like that. So that's the advantage of using the Vedic system. You'll come to this conclusions quicker. Like yes?
But he just wants to do spiritual suicide because he's really disappointed in the relationship and he doesn't have trust to the God. Vishnu can't fulfill his desire of suicide or it's impossible because Jiva is a man.
The problem comes up is that they don't have problem with Krishna as also part of the illusion. So I'm illusion, Krishna's illusion, and it's all fine. But the difficulty is they're attached to Brahman as the top. They're attached to liberation. So, because the point is they've seen that activities then create problem. So they don't understand that that's only because it's an illusion. But real activities on the spiritual platform, they don't cause pain. They cause bliss. So they have no experience of this. And there's no faith in this, so then they're attached to that idea of getting out of the material world rather than just improving yourself. Does that make sense? So in other words, they can improve themselves, but they've decided, no, they'll just get out of here. The place is bad, we're getting out. Fine, but why not improve yourself so when you're out, you have something to do? Does that make sense? So it's a mix. They kind of have, but kind of don't. But the point is because they don't take him that he's transcendental, they're actually offensive. Yeah. So the Mayavadis, they're offensive. Brahmavadis, see, everything is Brahman, so it's not a matter of illusion. Illusion is that it's not Brahman. So they have a better understanding. It's just not very, it's not fully developed. Does that make sense? So, they understand everything's Brahman, the Jiva's Brahman, the material energy is Brahman, the Supreme Lord is Brahman, so they're only seeing that aspect of eternity and knowledge. Does that make sense? So they're on that platform. When there's more understanding about the Lord, then it can be that appreciation of the Lord, and then it can take on that devotional aspect. So it's not that, so they're the ones that have no problem about God, just that they're just saying, Brahman is supreme, and it has all these features. So they're not offensive to God, but they just don't actually fully understand his position. Like that. Does that make sense? So we're not talking about those. We're talking about the Mayavadis, and the, you know, Buddhists, all these kinds of like that, that actually do not understand God and actually think he's in a mundane kind of position. So those that respect God, and they're Mayavadis, that they accept God, that they're still Mayavadis, they're a little bit better than those who don't respect God and are Mayavadis. Right? Because the thing is the difference is the one does accept that the position of God, that he can be a person, there can be personality, there can be relation, just they don't know anything about it. I mean, like zero. But he comes and helps out, you know, the right people at the right time, but that's about it. You know? But, you know, and it's just because it's his people. But the thing is knowing beyond that, that all people are his people and the whole creation is his, and why he would be, and what's the purpose of elevation, that they have no idea.
Regarding the gain and safety, the Mayavadis are doing all this to get the gain and safety.
Yes, because they're getting the gain of Brahmananda and the safety of, you know, they are Brahman and they'll have it eternally.
How it is to be properly connected to Krishna?
How?
Desire for gain and safety, what is the proper connection to Krishna? You have to help such people.
If we're,
those who are after gain and safety in this way, if we have to help them connect, like, how we can connect these desires to Krishna?
Means, how do you connect the impersonalist desire for gain and safety to Krishna? It's the same way as with the karma. They're both mundane. Means, safety means that we're taking shelter of the Lord. Right? And the and gain will be is whatever that position is, being that eternal, then in that relationship we're gaining that so that we can then function within that and we'll experience that. So it's the same. It's just that one's using karma to advance, the other uses jnana. So one's using attachment, one's using renunciation. Right? So the renunciation, so you're renouncing things for developing that relationship or the devotion with Krishna. And for the karma, you're engaging your attachments in Krishna's service to develop love for Krishna. Right? So So it's still yukta vairagya. It's not yours, but you're engaging whatever you have. Just the karma has more, the vairagya has less. But it's the same principle. It's just how much volume of material things you're working with. So, here, Srila Jiva Goswami gives in conclusion about the relation between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. By nature, the Lord and the Jiva are both conscious beings, and the scriptural statements about their non-difference are only to indicate this common point. The scriptures use various examples and metaphors to help us understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond our experience. To give us some idea of His nature, the statements about non-difference are given, comparing Him to ourselves, right? Because there has to be something common for us to see the relationship. We know we are conscious, and so the scriptures explain that the Lord is conscious like us, but He's the Supreme Conscious. This should never be taken to mean that the Lord and Jiva are one in all respects, just as when it said He was a tiger in battle. No one thinks that a man actually turned into a tiger. Rather, the second meaning is applied, and we understand the statement to mean he was ferocious like a tiger in battle. Similarly, the statements in the Vedic literature about non-difference must be taken in the secondary sense, right? Because in the primary they're not. And the guiding factor is its consistency with the conclusion derived from Srila Vyasadeva's trance, right? So we're always going to take it back to his understanding and realization of Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Because with that, that's how you can reconcile anything. Right? It's just like, do we have, I mean, technically, as far as, you know, our social interaction or anything, do we have any problem with Shris or Madhvas or Nimbarkas or Vallabhas? No, nothing at all. And basically, we don't associate with them much. If we bump into them, we're cool. But if we don't, we're fine. The day will actually go on. Right? Now, by what we saw before, taking from some, what do you call it? Remember, we went some years back, we were trying to go through the four sampradayas?
Yeah.
And then the problem is they had taken the literatures from each sampradaya, but according to their view on it, rather than just try to take, you know, what would be, how we would then see them. And so then they were pointing out that there was a problem, that the Madhus have a problem with the Shris. They feel they didn't take it far enough, right? They left the door open to impersonalism by Vishishta Dwait, so they find a fault there, you know. And then, you know, like this, then the different sampradaya, they don't necessarily get along so great, right? That's because they're not this Achinta Veda. Without the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, they can't reconcile all the different positions. But with the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, it's not a problem. You can see the difference. So that means you can associate when it comes up, but not. Right? Because there's commonality, so we interact based on the commonality. But then once we get to that point where it's difference, then that's where we don't. Like Prabhu was saying, you can discuss philosophy and scripture and all that up to the point where that's as far as they can go. And after that, you just don't. You just follow the general etiquette and everything works. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that Jiva Goswami has established the Vedic literature. Then of the Vedic literature, the Puranas, and of the Puranas, then the Srimad Bhagavatam. And what's outstanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam to even the other Puranas, what makes it, is because of Vyasadeva's trance. Him coming to the realization of Achintaveda Veda Tattva. That means that's the top position. We have to reconcile everything back to that. Right? That's why, as you see, it's one of the Dasa Mool. It's in Sambandha. When you understand the Lord, the Jiva, and the material energy, and all that, you still have to understand the Achintaveda Veda Tattva. That's how you're going to apply that understanding. Yes.
I think in Chaitanya Charitamrita it is mentioned Mahaprabhu will actually see, he met with all the representatives of the four sampradayas.
Yes,
he defeated them all.
Yes.
But on the very basic level, he never went into, you know, like details with them, rahasyas and like
no.
that.
Because the point with them, they're connecting to the Lord, and so that they're Vaishnavas, so that's perfect. Just as perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So their area, that's their realization, that's their service, so it's fine. You know? It's a matter of taste. You know, someone likes to eat, you know, when you have a buffet, someone eats this, someone eats that. It's not a matter of, you know, everyone stands on where are the guys from this side of the tray? Oh no, we're on this side of the buffet, you know? And while they're fighting, someone else just comes along and takes whatever they like, right? Or even just wheels it off and to his party, right, you know? So it's a progression of consciousness. Progression of the position, because you see, it's mentioned why Lord Chaitanya accepted the line of Madhvacharya, because for him Krishna is the main deity. Right? So that becomes an important aspect. So then it can be taken, well, for Ramanujacharya, then Vishnu is the main, Mahanarayan. Then there may be his incarnation as Krishna. But for Madhvacharya, he puts the emphasis on Krishna. Right? Because even the temple is called Krishna Mat. He has four hands. You know, he's from Dwarka, but it's the aspect of Krishna that is important for them. And so then you talk about Krishna and all that, they're cool. Right? So that's why it said he accepted in that line. Yeah. So the point being is we need to be able to appreciate this point of Achintaveda Veda Tattva. We have to interpret everything back to that. And so when we see why he used Vyasadeva's trance, because we can just say it's here, because in that trance he's seeing all the different difficulties within philosophy. They're all reconciled within this one. Right? So he sees Maya. Maya's controlling the living entities, but she's controlled by Krishna. And he doesn't actually interact. It's he interacts with this internal potency, the transformation of that to the external. So then everybody fits into their place very nicely. That's the beauty of it. When you have Vaishnavism, it all matches from Vaikuntha down. But when you have the Gaudiya Vaishnavism, then from Braj all the way down, it all makes sense. Right? So that makes sense. So, means you have the living entities that are just self-centered. So you can't make much sense out of it other than just you're acting for your senses. You know, so it's not more realization than the animals. Then when this idea of we cooperate together, we'll get better sense gratification. So there's a little raise in consciousness, because now you're willing to cooperate, work with each other. There's the concept of authority. But it's still a made-up authority. It's a misguided kind of concept, but at least there's some elements to work with. Right? Then when they come to the next level, they accept the authority of the Supreme and following God's laws. And so, but their whole purpose of all this is still for their own benefit. you know, more on the, you know, the gain and safety in the way of karma. Then consciousness goes a little higher, then they appreciate that, no, there's something beyond the material, right? Because of the nature of the soul in that. So there's spirit and all that. That's more important. Because by accepting God and accepting the soul and expecting the eternality of this, then karma works very nicely. Because then I can work, do nice, there's no, it doesn't run out. I can forever go on enjoying myself on the material platform. You know, as long as I'm nice. Right? So, then they're taking it beyond that. That, no, there's something beyond, there's a happiness higher than that. And so they're getting up to that platform, so they're seeing just up to that Brahman, that lower kind of aspect of Brahman, within the material. Then you have the impersonalist, they'll see a little bit higher. That it's all Brahman, but they don't really make so much distinction, so then, you know, they're good. They're situated a little bit better. But still, it's not complete. Then there are those who then accept the aspect of Paramatma actually, you know, in the proper form, like that. So it's Bhagavan, but it has that aspect more of he's God. He's the Supreme and all that. So then they'll see up to there. Then they can put Brahman, you know, the Brahma bodies in the right place, the Maya bodies, the Karmis, the Vikarmis, and just the, you know, animals. Right? And so like that. But then when you get to Golok, you get to those sampradayas, because I think two sampradayas. Yeah, no, actually. What is it? Is it Nimbarka? Because they'll be in Goloka. And Vishnu Swami is who?
Vallabha.
So you have two lines that are connected with Goloka, and two lines that are connected with Vaikuntha. Like that. There can be a little bit of an open. Generally, the one will stay within, and the other one could extend up to there, because some of the Madhvas and that, they're really into Krishna and Dwarka and all that, so they could end up there and just be a little bit more reverential. So they'll probably be in Dasya. They won't move into the other rasas, but they could be in Dwarka. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they're only going to get up to that much. So even so, then with Nimbarkas, they'll see up to Vrindavan. You know, even some of the others see up to, it means Bundal, in the Sri line, one of the 12 Alwars. Then some of the Shris, you know, that know more of the philosophy and culture and a little more broad mind, they joke that she's actually an ISKCON devotee. She's not actually Sri Vaishnav line. And she happens to be there. She's born in that family and she grows up there. I think her father was the head pujari. I'm not sure where, what temple.
Her father is also an Alwar.
Her father was an Alwar also?
Yeah, he's very Alwar.
You need to.
In the old scholars, Shri Viliputtu.
You need to be able to speak in bubbles to say these names.
P-E-R-A, Peri.
Yeah, but you have to roll the R and then put a little nasal, so Peri. Yeah, so then you get. Yeah, so it just depends on the language. Yeah. So she and what temple?
Shri Viliputtu.
And where is that?
Tamil Nadu.
Is that connected with Sri Rangam or?
Sri Rangam.
It's in Sri Rangam.
No, not in Sri Rangam. Sri Viliputtu is the place as Sri Rangam.
Then
is
near, then finally she comes to Sri Rangam. There she gets married to Ranganathan.
Okay, later. But where the deity is of Anda, where they put the garland every day?
That's
okay. So so every day she'd make the garland, that was her service, and then she'd go to the mirror, tie it on, and look at it, and then if she liked it, then it would go to the deities. So I think her father one day commented about this, and then then her point was, is that, no, it's about...
They say she's the incarnation of Nila.
Nila, yeah. So she's a Lakshmi, so... So maybe that kind of thing, you may have more of that aspect of that Dwarka and that kind of more intimacy and that that's beyond the general Vaikuntha mood, like that. So then they could get into Dwarka, but there still is the aspect of servitorship, right? Because then Lakshmi, especially Nila, Padasavana, are just taking care, making the arrangements and all that. You sometimes see her, because you'll see Lakshmi, you'll see Boo, and then you'll see Nila. She's generally down on the she's not up. You have Ananta say she's down. Because like when you have the deity and there's that lotus at the base, like you have like that base, that's Nila. That means the Dham is Bu, but where he puts his foot, there's a lotus there, that's Nila. Good. Does that make sense? So he's with Shri, then he's in the Dham, that's Bu, where he steps, that's Nila. So in Vrindavan, all three are there. It's just that when you get to Dwarka, you see it more brought out. But when you get to Vaikuntha, then they're very specific. Okay. So we have the same principles.
Okay. Yeah. Also, out of all the 12 arrows, she is the only one who wrote poems, like of gopis.
Yes, they're talking about the gopis, but that's the whole point where we're getting to, is that these gopis, it's still that Vrindavan and opulence, it's still Goloka, it's not Braj, right? So they can, depending upon the focus, get in that range, but it's still all, you could say, Vaikuntha. Because you say there's Braj, and then there's Vaikuntha. So anything below Braj is Vaikuntha. But there's the Vaikuntha within Goloka, like that, and the one that's in the Vaikuntha planets with the 24 Vishnu Murtis, like that. Does that make sense? So when you understand Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, all the other ones can fall into place, and one's not bewildered. One has one's own focus. Does that make sense? Yeah. While other ones, then they may be able to accommodate or not accommodate or get bewildered or this and that. That's why they just stick to their own thing and like that. So they have to stick to our own thing. We want to stick to our own thing. Right? That's Rag Bhakti.
Yeah, I was thinking this is the simplest explanation of Rag Bhakti.
Yeah.
They have to, but
we want to. Yeah. Yes.
But if we connect this to Bhakta Samrita Sindhu about all those mudras and nyasas,
yes,
and mantras of Dwarka.
Yes.
So, for example, if devotees take it, as now it's very fashionable to take from everywhere.
Yes.
And they don't understand what they're doing, but their intent is just to make it more fancy for the Lord. Would it be offensive?
But it's not offensive. It means, that if you're taking up, if you're doing these aspects connected with Dwarka, it's not offensive, because it's all Vaishnava. As he mentioned, it's mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And so he mentioned the Yavarana Puja, that there's, what is it, 8 levels? 8 different groups. Like Bhakti Vinotakur, we have our group, our Yavarana Puja means it starts with the spiritual master, then Yoga Maya, then all the gopis, you know, headed by Radharani, then all the other Brajavasis, and like that. So for us, we do have that Avarna Puja. It's just that's what we'll move in. And so if you have that, it means everybody else that's mentioned the Avarna Puja has expanded from them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be there. You know, Radharani's there, then you have Dwarka, then you have Vaikuntha, it's Lakshmi. Does that make sense? So it's still expanding from her.
It's not offensive, but just...
It's not offensive, it's just that it may get in the way, because why are they doing this? Is it purely thinking about Krishna's that? It's a matter of that they like that, but they're engaging in Krishna's service. So it's an attachment, but at the same time, it's an attachment to rules, you know, and their rules being, you know, from the Lord and being Vedic, then they're far out rules. So it's not that they're not attractive, but it's more about what they get out of it than what the Lord's getting out of it. Because if you see and watch, it gets a little dry and all that. Like I remember watching Subramanyam Swami once for... They're a junior mat of the... Pejor's mat? Yeah, Pejor. Pejor's mat, not Pejor. Yeah. So... because there's 8 main mats, but there's 22 mats total. So all these other mats outside of the 8, right? Then they're going to be the other 14 mats. They're all connected with those 8. So Subramanya is connected with Pejwa. And so then I was somehow or another happened to be there on Nrisimha Chaturdasi one year, and the deity that they have. the Srina deity is quite small. It's not very big. Very small. And the puja that he did, it took an hour and a half. But the technical stuff didn't take that long. He spent most of the time cleaning the deity, because after, you do the technical things, you do a nice big abhishek, so they do a lot of things, repeat a lot of things, because they just repeat the rituals many, many times. And so then at the end, he spent a lot of time cleaning the deity, because the South Indian deities are quite ornate. There's all kinds of little nooks and crannies. And somehow or another, yogurt loves to get caught in those little places. It's just the perfect thing, and you just get stuck in there. So using a clean, a new, the spine from the coconut frond, that you'd use for, the hard brooms, they're using the back, the big end. He was just spending the whole time there going through and this and that, long time. Then after that, then doing some pujas and this and that, because they don't really dress their deities or stuff like that. They might put a cloth or put a crown or this and that, but they don't dress like we dress. No one dresses the way we dress. Like that. That's why you see anywhere, you'll see people have pictures of our deities, because no one dresses the deities like that. It just doesn't happen. They'll use some interesting techniques and different things like that, but no one will go to that detail than we will. So, the whole point was, is he'd spend more time on that. The other ritual is just something you do. You know how to do them, you just do them. But when you're sitting there and you're going through and this and that, looking at a book and this and that, and so you're having fun. That ultimately is Krishna. So the whole point is, how long will it take for doing mudras like that, that it becomes so natural and flowing, like I was saying that these senior persons are. So generally you'll see is that the Brahmins, at least the general pujaris, and when they're in their 50s, 60s, generally 60s, even 70s, that's when you start seeing it has that flow. Right? And like that. So then they're just doing it, looks nice and all that. They do all this stuff. And generally when they do, a lot of them just leave that to them, because it's more technical and no one else likes to do it. They like to do the big things that everyone's going to see. Right? And so then it's going to take that long. And these are guys that use it every day, multiple times a day. And they've started like this, but someone like these acharyas, like Subramaniam and that, they start when they're kids and had that full responsibility. So they're at a younger age come to that point. There's renunciation, there's nothing else to distract, and so then it just moves forward very nicely. So one is that, when does it get to the point where it's just about Krishna? Right? And two, why use that medium when that's not the favorite class of Krishna? Right? It's mentioned, the acharyas mentioned that, the nice bath, clothes, ornaments, the scents and flowers, and food. Right? So these ones means the dress and the ornaments go together. So it's the bathing, the dressing, then garlands and fragrances and boga. These five are the ones that are the most important to Krishna. So mudras and that aren't. Yantras, yes. Remember in 11th canto went through and told which ones there was, and of all those five, for the archa, then the bathing is the big one. That's the most fun. It's like elephants. You get them in water and then they just go for it. Right? Yes.
Some of my Indian students belong to Ramanandi Sampradaya.
Ramanandis. Okay.
And they consider that it's enough for Diksha.
I don't know enough about Ramanandis to say if their Diksha line is bona fide. I know, all I've heard about them, that the Ramanandis are a branch of the Sri Vaishnav line, but they tend to be a little bit, I think they're kind of considered their Sahajiyas. once you get off the path, it kind of all goes together. You know, it's
basically just, the main streets they reject them.
Yeah, they're considered their apasampradayas, like that. So I don't know if their diksha line has any, you know, solidness to it. So point is they should associate with devotees and chant and whatever they can, and then, you know, go as far forward as they can. Like that. So yes, so then the point is the mudras they're getting into because it's interesting and different than something else like that. But the point is, as you can see, it's not that, it's not that, because we'll say, oh no, but they do all these technical things, but the tantrics actually do more. It's like before chanting Gayatri, they do, that means there's 24 syllables. They represent 24 elements of the universe. So the whole universe is created out of the Brahma Gayatri. So everything in the universe comes from that. And they have this whole list of mudras that they do before that. I think it's like 18 mudras or something that they have to do. It's the preliminaries to their even chanting Gayatri. So for them, mudras are, that's all they do. Mudras and bijas. So you can see as when you come into Pancharatra, it's reduced down a bit. Like that. So they're not showing these things it becomes less. So then naturally then when it comes into you're just talking about Krishna in Braj, then it'll be even less. So it's just the purification and all that. Those things is done. Rupa Goswami gives those. So the Dhenu and all these different things that you use for calling the deities and all that, that's there. But once you worship the deities, then you don't use them. You don't, the 16 items don't have mudras. You don't use the mudras for that. That makes sense. Simple things that are etiquette, like asking the Lord to sit. That's that you're going to do that anyway. Or tell someone to eat. Yeah, please eat. You know, like that. So you use the Grash Mudra. But that's it. You don't use the items for the 16 items. Like that. Because otherwise it's there. It's very, very technical. Does that make sense? So it's just, we have enough. The point, the devotion is the main thing. So there's no need. We have enough medium to express the devotion. Because you can say it's much more opulent in Dwarka, so that means they should be able to express more devotion, but they don't, because that reverence and all that, then it takes up part of the flavor. Well, in Braj, it's more simple on one level, and so as far as the ritual aspect goes, and so therefore the more devotion. But it doesn't mean that it's any less, it's probably more sophisticated. You know, the fineness of it. You know, the other one will be grand, but the other will be, you have the fineness there. So that's what it is, yeah.
You
said you
are coming to the
yes. No, they're always, they're bona fide and all that. Just that they're going to their place. You know, it's like being in a bus station. It's the right place, you know, everybody has a ticket, but they're all going to different destinations. So, yeah, okay, where are you going? You know, this one's going to Tallahassee. Okay, and you, yeah, Timbuktu. Wow, cool. Yeah, like that.
You know, the point is that sometimes you see some people
come,
and they not from this parampara background. They give you good appreciation.
That's fine. That's nice.
How much, you know, we should give to them?
How much should we give?
Yeah.
Now, how much should we give what?
Importance.
We don't need to. The point is that the surrender to Krishna is the importance. He's saying people that come, they appreciate Krishna. They're not necessarily from the Sampradaya, is how much importance do we give? Like that. It's just we follow the etiquette and deal nicely. As much as they're willing to take part in the devotional activities, we involve ourselves, you know.
For instance, like,
yeah, but here, don't, means when you're getting into it, there's millions of them, so you don't have to go off and name them. Okay, Nirmirbhai, okay, what about Anandamoy Ma? Okay, no, what about, it's a general rule, because they're all going to come and they're all going to be a mishmash of everything. Right? And so then, even as Mirabai, it's not that they're totally Mirabai followers. It's just, okay, they appreciate Mirabai, and they appreciate this one, and, you know, Amitabha Bachchan is, you know, also a great sage, and, you know, all this kind of stuff like that. They go for darshan every morning, you know, that. Like that. Did any of you see when remember, where was that guy? He used to wear the black cheddar, and he did the Murari Bapu, yeah. He came here. Do you remember when they did that? They had a big pandal there and that, and they went down and chanted some mantras. But he would come. He was Murari Bapu. He's a big, I'm not sure where he's from. Maybe Gujarat or something like that.
He's a Gujarati.
He's Gujarati. So, somehow or another, he's one of these Bhagavat Sapta, and he's very, very famous. And there's some kind of a thing, something, some pastime with a Hanuman deity, and he got this black cheddar, so he always wears this black cheddar. That's his thing, you know, like, what's it, MG?
MGR.
Yeah, then he had that funny Russian hat, you know, everybody's, you know, our man in Pune, you know, he had his regular hat, regular stocking hat, Osho, yeah, like that, you know, so everybody has to have their little thing, you know, so then he, where's it? Oh, so then he stayed down in the you know, when you're going from the Grihastha area into towards the Samadhi, and there's those two big buildings that are mirroring each other. So up the one has this little like that like a terrace, you know, up I think on the third floor. It's quite big, and so he was staying up there. They had arranged that. So every morning, because when he was doing it, I think, I forget how many were here, hundreds of thousands of people came from Calcutta and not to here. Yeah. And so then he would come out on that terrace in the morning, and everybody would be down in the morning, and he'd give blessings and all that. And so like that, they all came for darshan in the morning. He didn't talk until, I think, 12. He had a Maunabrata until 12 o'clock. You know, so everyone respects, oh, wow. Like this. One, it just, then he doesn't have to talk to anybody, so that makes it very easy. And two, someone explained, because he does all the you know, every night does these Bhagavat Saptas, his voice is no good, so if he doesn't do that, he can't talk. So you put that all together, and so, but he's a sage anyway, because of that. So, like that. So you understand? So they're going to take a mishmash of everything. That means that the technical catch-all term for that sampradaya is called Hindu. Right? And so you just deal in those areas of their attraction to Krishna that they're willing to take part in activities that are that we will say are bona fide. Then we'll take them through that. And areas that they're not interested in, we just let it go. And then you know, then they'll go away. They'll go back to their place, right? But they'll been here. They'll have darshan. They'll have prasad. They'll, you know, meet devotees. So they're going to get so much spiritual benefit. But we don't take it any more than that. We won't sit down and have a nice discussion with them and hear their philosophy. We don't need to hear their philosophy, right? It's just like this. You know how to cook khichdi? Yeah, so then that's it. So you don't need to hear anything what they're going to say. It's just, you know, whether they cut the potatoes bigger or smaller, more potatoes or less potatoes, or, you know, that's all. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you're always nice. The etiquette, we're always nice. But we don't have to go more than that. So we expose them as much as they're interested in and inspired. Like they like to go for darshan, we'll take them. They'll take prasad, we'll take prasad. You know, like this. So whatever it is that they're happy with, then we'll engage them. So they're engaged in service, and that's good. And then it'll be a jata sukriti, and then they'll move forward. Does that make sense? But if you see they have a sincere interest, then we'll take it as much as that is there. But if they're maintaining their own thing, and yes, I know, I read Bhagavad Gita when I was 12, you know, yes, we know all these things. We're Indians, you know, all these things like that. But, you know, then there you just go, oh, yeah, nice, nice, okay. Yeah, hey, what about prasad? You know, it's just... Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay. The Vedas have statements declaring both difference and non-difference. One cannot apply the the logic of Ardha Kukuti. Footnote 13. Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, or the logic of half a hen, is the example used when a person accepts only that part of scripture which agrees with his view and rejects the parts with which he disagrees. Like a man who rejects the mouth end of the chicken because he has to feed it, but accepts the rear half because it gives eggs. Right? Yeah. So we have to, yeah. So one cannot apply the logic of Ardha Kukuta Nyaya to the Vedas by accepting only the statements favorable to one's point of view and rejecting the opposing ones. These seemingly contradictory points can be most naturally reconciled by accepting the philosophy of Achinta Veda Veda. Right? So it'll just work. Because even if they have a mood of reverence towards Vishnu, right? Then it, and they're from another sampradaya, by appreciating Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, it'll make that work much easier for them. And then, you know, they can go to, you know, they can still be within that realm of Vaikuntha, but it just widens the range. Instead of just the Vaikuntha planets, it can be within Vaikuntha, within Goloka. So it can extend the opportunities. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions the Achinta Veda Veda philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the last sentence of this Anucheda. Achintya Bheda Bheda means inconceivable, simultaneous oneness and difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity, or between the energetic source and its energy. The energy is identical with the energetic because it cannot exist without it. At the same time, the energy is different from the energetic source because its effect can be perceived outside the energetic. This relation is conceivable from the logical point of view. So there has to be the point of establishing inconceivable. So if you want to get to this level of philosophy, you first have to establish inconceivable. And it's quite logical that the Supreme, being beyond the you know, being the Creator, being beyond everything, is inconceivable. Like that. It has to be, even the Mayavadis will use it when it works for them. Right? You know, suddenly, all these kind of things. Right? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching of Achinta Veda Veda is the greatest gift of philosophy to the world. Right? So that's something that's never been given before either. Right? So we'll always go by on all Braja Prema and this and that. But it's the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva that we're able to appreciate Braja Prema. Right? Because as we see, means before, when we're talking about the other devotees, when we're going through all the different cantos, we don't see so much discussion about the Lord is in everything, is everywhere, all things are in Him, He is in everything. And in this way, you can, you know, they are absorbed in the Lord. You know, you'll see is basically more on these just on the active aspects of the nine aspects of features of devotional service. But when we get to the Brajabasis, and then 11th canto, when we're discussing about their position as the highest, this comes up many, 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 many times. Why? Because that's, they have the understanding of Achinta Veda Veda. That's why then they just are always absorbed in Krishna. Right? That makes sense. So it's that attraction to Krishna that's the important thing. You have the understanding, okay, but it's the attraction to Krishna that's important. Does that make sense? But their attraction, the Braja Rati, is what it is because they can perceive Krishna everywhere, but others can only perceive in a particular place. That's why we're saying this idea of Rag, where it's only about Krishna and the gopis, is not actually Braja praying, because they can't accept outside their area. So it's narrow like Vaikuntha. It may be applied on Krishna, right? But it's quite narrow. So it's not actually Rag. Right? But if they keep their focus on Krishna, they'll advance to the point where they'll actually take up Rag. Right? But, you know, you'll have to spend some time getting over what they think is wrong. You know, it's like the, like Prabhupada mentioned, that music school in Vienna. You know, is that if you come, means if you've come to the school, you know nothing about music, then they have their, you know, their standard price. If you come to, they're already trained in music, the price is much higher, because they first have to untrain you and then train you. So it just takes more time and a lot longer. Like that, yeah. His teachings do not condemn any Vedic scripture or point of view. Rather, it reconciles and integrates the many apparent contradictions and makes them all consistent with the Vedic conclusions. So, through Achintavada Veda Tattva, you can make any of the four schools of Vaishnava philosophy consistent. And even we can say is we can take the even Shankara's view and bring it in line with what it's actually supposed to be. Right? Does that make sense? So you see, as most of these, it's all about this aspect of the primary creation. You know, this side or that side. So the Ekavad goes a little bit that side, but it doesn't really actually understand what's that side. And then all the other six schools are all this side. You know, so it's all kind of around Pradhan. So it's all, you know, centered around, you know, the material energy. Hmm. So, Bengalis. Right? Ma. Yeah. Does that make sense? So all these things are shown how and where it actually is supposed to fit. Right? His teachings are the natural and direct meaning of the Vedic literature. More details on the living entity and his relationship with the Supreme Lord are given in the Paramatma Sandarbha. Right? Because that's where it's going to get into more detail. But as we get into it, it'll all be from that perspective. Because we've seen before, just the Bhagavatam and those pastimes, so then it takes on. So here you're just breaking it down so that there's no illusions. Then you can deal with all these things in their positive form. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not more of technical, like, it's technical, but it has that more pleasant flavor. Like, you remember Vedanta Sutra, where we were doing it without Prabhupada's purports and the Acharya's purports? It had one flavor. When we added it, it had another. It's just as technical, but now it has it. So that's the Srila Balade Vidyabhushana. Thus, Tata, because it was concluded that the meaning of bifurcation and reflection of Brahman mentioned in the scriptures is similarity only. Scripture speaking of non-difference of Brahman and Jiva should be coordinated with the conclusion that Vyasa experienced in Samadhi. Right, so they're basing it on that similarity because they want to avoid the difference. Right, so that's why Madhvacharya just focused on difference. They have enough similarity. Right, so the point is they have to add difference. Otherwise, they can't balance their philosophy. But the easiest way to do that is the Achintavada Veda Tattva. But the point is you're dealing with these really hard nuts. So the point is you just hammer them over the head with difference, and then finally they start to see it. Right? So that makes sense, yeah.
Can we talk about Achintavada Veda Tattva in the sense that it's the same amount of difference and similarity, or it doesn't have to be?
Well, it doesn't have to be. It's just wherever it applies, you see the one, you see the... Just like, let's say you have a good friend, and there's a moment of that feeling of that good friendness. So what's the prominent? The oneness or the difference? Yeah. So it's just a matter of the situation. It'll be more one, more different.
It requires maturity.
Hence, Brudge. Brudge is a mature. That's why it says it's never been given. Because it takes a particular level of maturity. Right, but that's coming just by the grace of the Vaishnava. So it's not that, yeah, we're so mature and all that. No, it's by Prabhupada and the Acharyas that we're able to be given this because it's the natural position of the soul to be able to function in this spiritual platform as servant of Krishna. Therefore, every soul can take this up. But the point is without this level, you won't catch everybody. It's the only thing that can catch all personalities, all levels. So that's why I was saying is that to say, oh no, this is only an Indian thing. No, this is a cosmic thing, you know, in the real sense of the term. Right? Not even universal, it's cosmic, because it also reconciles Vaikuntha, the spiritual realm. So, yeah, you know, it's just that you have to say it in the right attitude. Cosmic. Yeah. Yeah. So, we can accommodate anybody into the movement. It's just like Harita was saying the other day, remember we were talking about, I think it was at in San Francisco, something like that. Anybody understands Hashberry?
Okay.
Yeah, Tate Ashberry. But otherwise, on the West Coast, it was called Hashberry. Everywhere else, they mostly know it's Tate Ashberry. There's two streets, Tate Street and Ashberry Street. So that area there, that was Tate Ashberry. So the devotees were down and there. They had their place, and that, like you said, next door was a donut shop. And so many times they had to go out and get the devotees for class or anything like that. Because in any free time, they were at the donut shop. What was fun, from what I understand, is the Hell's Angels used to frequent that donut shop. And so somehow or another developed a nice rapport between the devotees and the Hell's Angels, right? Because the Hell's Angels, that, you know, are a bit wild, and the devotees are a bit wild. You know?
Oneness?
Yes, that's the similarity. Slight is the difference. The difference gets when the beard and all that kind of, you know, we wash, take a bath every day, you know, we wash our clothes every day. You know, it means we'll let you fill in the blanks. So I think when they did one of the big programs, maybe the first Rath Yatra and that, the Hell's Angels came as the security. Like that. Because of hanging out at the donut shop with the Haris, you know, so. Yes. So that was that's the thing, is we can accommodate everybody. So nobody has a problem. So this whole thing is, oh no, but we're only going for a particular demographic. Not at all. If you're following a Chintabeda Veda Tetra, it means, you know, there's no such, we don't worry about demographic. Everybody fits. You know? Everybody, yes.
Once a feminist came to Srila Prabhupada and she was trying to chant. She was sincere, but like really, you know, heavy. And she said, yeah, I can't worship Krishna. And Prabhupada is looking, okay, we worship Rama.
Yeah. And then what did she do?
She just continued and became a devotee.
Okay. Worship Rama. Yeah. So it's whatever the aspect is connected to Krishna, it works. You know, like so many devotees, at least from once in those early 70s that interacted with them, that most were very comfortable with the point that the main reason they became devotees was the prasad. You know, that's what convinced them. Later on, then you see much more as the intellectual and the seeker and all those kind of stuff like that. But yeah,
it was.
Yeah, maybe that could be it. Yes, because yeah, they didn't worry about that. Like we used to, I mean, it's probably everybody in the temple was a natural food freak before joining, but they didn't care because now it's all about Krishna and prasad. So therefore, it was nice. One day we had this one. He was also an anti-sugar freak, you know, and so. He came to the temple, and then he used to like the devotees that hang around, and his favorite thing was sweet rice. So you ask what's in it? When you ask a cook what's in it, you say, oh, it's rice cooked in milk. You know, it's just like you say, oh, it's sabji, what's in it? Oh, cauliflower, potatoes, you know, there's some tomatoes. You don't say, oh, there's some salt. There's, you know, you don't say stuff like that. So no one said there was sugar. He loved it. He would drink. Like, he would just, Sunday, all he'd do is drink that. He'd always see him. He's got a full cup, and he's drinking, gets another one to drink. Someone asked him, oh, you like sweet? Yeah, you know, it's just milk and rice. Yeah, it's so amazing, like that. No one told him.
he was high on sugar.
Could be, but he was one happy man. Yeah. He loved the prasad. Yeah, so in those days they didn't care. It was about Krishna, and that was the thing. We were Krishnatarians. We didn't care. Okay, some statements of non-difference are as follows. Tvam va aham asmi bhagavo deva aham vai tvam asi. O Lord, I am you and you are me. Varaha Upanishad 33. Tattvam asi, you are that I. Chandogya Upanishad. These statements of non-difference should always be construed to agree with Vyasadeva's conclusion in Samadhi. Right? Because the words have power, and they have varieties of power of what they can represent. So if you want them to represent the spiritual, then you have to be using the chit potency. And then that means then you have to bring it and reconcile it with Vyasadeva's conclusion if he got Samadhi, because that's where then the chit potency revealed to him the complete absolute truth. Right? At least as much as how much is worth revealing. The Lord and the Jiva are conscious entities, just as two brahmanas, pale and dark, young and very young, are one in the sense that both are brahmanas. They are not different in class, being conscious entities, but not in specific appearance. By the achintya shakti of the Lord, natural to him, which makes the impossible possible, there can be both difference and non-difference of Jiva and Brahman, because of qualities like being particle of light and the sun. In this matter, contradiction is avoided. Okay. So, anything? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini ki.